Hey there, agility friend. If you've listened to a few of my podcast episodes, you know that I'm a huge fan of something called growth mindset. You can have access to the best instruction in the world, and you can have the best dog in the world, and the best skills in the world, but if you don't have a solid mindset and approach to the challenges that sport and life are going to toss your way, you're not going to be able to really make the most of all of those bests that you have, you know, best instruction, best dog, best skills, all that stuff. I'm so passionate about the importance of our mindset when it comes to dog agility and really everything in life that I've written an ebook about growth versus fixed mindset, what the hallmarks of those two mindsets are, and how one can really propel you along your agility journey and one may really be holding you back, maybe without you even being aware of it. That ebook is not for sale anywhere, but it is available for free to subscribers of my email list. So if you're curious about what a growth mindset is, what a fixed mindset is, and how to ensure that you've got the right mindset for making the most of your dog agility training and handling journey, head to podcast.theagilitychallenge.com and scroll down till you see the link to subscribe to my email list and get that ebook. It's totally free and it's a game changer. Check it out today at podcast.theagilitychallenge.com. This is the Agility Challenge Podcast with Daisy Peel. You're listening to episode 2. Welcome to the Agility Challenge Podcast. I'm your host, Daisy Peel. Join me as I talk about everything related to the mental side of the sport of dog agility. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by negative self-talk or lack of confidence, or if your dog training to-do list seems so long that you don't even know where to get started, then this podcast is for you. For more podcast episodes, training content, and coaching from me, head to www.theagilitychallenge.com, where members get access to monthly training and handling challenges, in addition to league play and a whole lot more. Let's dive in with today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of the Agility Challenge Podcast. It's me, Daisy. I'm back for more. I'm glad that you're back for more as well. First, I wanted to go over a brief review of something that I talked about in episode 1, and that is something called the thought model. Now, the thought model is essentially this. Objective circumstances, like last time I talked about the temperature. So an objective circumstance could be that it's 10 degrees out. That's a circumstance. And those circumstances almost immediately in our minds, our brains, which are amazing machines, those circumstances trigger thoughts and just almost intertwined so much that you just can't even see any daylight between it, between the two are feelings. So circumstances trigger thoughts, which cause feelings. And then those feelings typically cause actions, and those actions lead us to results. And those results are typically always evidence of the original thought that we had. So I talked last time about how the circumstance could be that it's 10 degrees out and the thought might be it's cold, and that causes some feelings for me, at least, that it's unpleasant, it's going to be so cold outside. And the action is that I bundle up and then I go outside, and my result is that it's evidence that I go outside and it's cold. I feel cold. I feel uncomfortable. I'm glad I bundled up. Thank goodness I did that. And so, you know, it's sort of all self-serving. On the other hand, my husband goes outside in shorts and sandals when it's 10 degrees and snowy out. So he's definitely got some different thoughts and feelings that lead him to different actions. So that's kind of a review of the thought model. I'm going to dig into that a little bit more in this episode. It always reminds me of, and I brought this up last time as well in episode 1, I used to be a chemistry teacher. And one of the very first experiments that we did in the chemistry classroom at the beginning of the year each year was observation versus inference. And so I just had the kids light a candle. They had a candle and a beaker, which is a glass, looks like a cup. And they had to make some observations and inferences. And so the whole point of the experiment was to help those kids understand the difference between observations, which are more objective, and inferences, which are the almost immediate conclusions that we draw regarding those observations that we made. So the thought model is a lot like the scientific method, and it's really designed to clarify the difference between observations and inferences, which our minds are making all the time. We're constantly making judgments based on our thoughts and feelings and taking actions based on those judgments. So we've got circumstances, thoughts, feelings, those drive us to actions, which cause results, which typically serve as evidence for the original thought. So the trick with that is to try and be aware of the feelings that are a result of your thoughts, which the feelings then cause actions. The trick is to try and be aware of those feelings without being carried away by them. And it does definitely have to do with dog training and dog agility, which is, and we don't really talk about it too much in the context of dog sports, which is why I started this podcast up again. Because the trick is to be aware of those feelings without being carried away by them, and to recognize that you have a choice about how you can respond to the thoughts that you have. And you can evaluate, wait a minute, why do I feel this way about this thought? Is this for real? Do I need to feel this way? Do I need to take actions based on these feelings? And a pretty good example of becoming aware of your thoughts and your feelings can kind of be like, and this is pretty relevant for me, it can be like having a room in your house that's pretty messy. Or in my case, having a room in my house that's filled with boxes that I still haven't unpacked from when we moved this last year from Oregon to Ohio. So becoming aware of your thoughts can kind of be like becoming aware of that room in your house, that room in my house that I never really got around to unpacking. So I decide that I'd really like to use this room for something more productive. Maybe I'd like to use it for my canine fitness room instead of just storing boxes from the move. So I go in the room, I want to use the room, and I flip on the lights and the room's a complete disaster. There's boxes everywhere. I don't even know what's in the boxes. It's a mess. So the easiest thing to do in that case for me, and maybe for you, if you're thinking about another room in your house, is to just turn off the lights and back away slowly. And typically what happens once we make the choice is just, I'm just going to back away slowly from this. I'm just going to close the door, forget that I ever opened it, forget that I turned on the lights. Maybe I don't even care about this room. Maybe that'll just be the storage room. We typically almost immediately come up with excuses and justifications in our mind for why we should back away from this project of cleaning out this room and unpacking these boxes. I don't have time. Maybe I don't really need this room. This is just going to be a lot of work. I don't really want to know what's in these boxes. And of course, the analogy for us as dog trainers is that maybe we've got a dog training project or a behavior that we really need to work on. We know that it's not that great. Maybe it's our sit stay or our weave entries aren't that great. Maybe our toy motivation's not that great or our retrieve. But instead of tackling these things head on, and risking the failure that they might entail and the challenge that they might entail and the discomfort that they might entail and the work that they might entail, we just back away slowly and pretend that we didn't see it, that we don't know that it's a thing, and we just let it slip beneath the surface of conscious thought. So that's the easiest thing to do. Just stop paying attention, let it slip below our conscious awareness. We're just going to let life and thoughts happen to us instead of maintaining awareness of and choosing thoughts that serve us better. So, you know, let's stick with our sit stay example. We know that we don't have a great sit stay, but we just put it on the back burner over and over again. I don't need to think about that. I'm just not going to think about that. It's like that room in the house. I don't need that. And then we go to a show and we don't even really think about our sit stay not being great. It's fine, whatever. Maybe the course won't require a sit stay. And then we have a run where we need a sit stay and we are right back to square one where we have a circumstance that requires a sit stay. We have some thoughts about that sit stay, it triggers some feelings, most of them uncomfortable. And then we take some action and the sit stay fails. And then of course this more lack of action is also an action, by the way. So the whole thing is a vicious cycle. And then the results are dog doesn't have a great sit stay. And then we decide that we're not going to think about it. And, you know, it's a vicious cycle. So knowing that we have a longstanding training or handling problem doesn't really help us to address it in the long term. Doing something about it does help us. You know, if we came up with a plan to tackle the sit-stay problem and train the sit-stay problem, that would actually help us. Procrastination or never taking action, letting those things remain below the surface of our conscious awareness, really means that we're choosing to keep those training and handling issues that we currently have. So you can go to a competition or go to a class and complain about not having a great sit-stay. But honestly, if we've chosen not to take action on it and we're just complaining about it, that means really that we're choosing the issues that we currently have. So, I mean, we're all in that situation. Nobody's perfect. I definitely have some behaviors that I have chosen not to do anything about. And by choosing not to do anything about those issues, I've chosen to keep them, basically. And I can say that it's not a conscious choice because I'm choosing not to think about them, but that kind of is a conscious choice. So, and that's okay. Sometimes it's fine to have some handling and training issues that instead of changing the situation, you're just going to stick with the status quo. There are plenty of legitimate reasons to do that, and that's fine. But if we are saying, oh my gosh, my sit stay is terrible, I just hate how bad my sit stay is. If you're choosing not to take action, that is actually a choice. So that's kind of what I want to talk about today. We've got the thought model where circumstances trigger thoughts, which cause feelings, which cause actions, which lead to results. And really what I want to talk about is changing that cycle so that you can change how you feel about something by changing your thoughts about that thing and then changing the actions that you take because you feel a little bit differently about it and changing the results. So first, though, before I go any further, I want to talk a little bit about something that might seem kind of tangential to all of this, but definitely plays a role. And that is the difference between wanting something and committing to it. Now, it's January of 2023. It's a new month of a new year. And so a lot of us have goals and resolutions. And that implies that we are committing to taking action on something. But I want to talk about the difference between wanting and committing, because if you just want something, if you just want a better sit stay, then that just means you just want it, but it doesn't really imply that you need to take action. It feels good, or it can feel good, to say that you want something. It's safe. It's a safe place to be. It sounds good. It sounds noble. I want a better sit stay this year. But you don't actually have to do anything challenging. You don't have to challenge yourself. You don't have to challenge your notions of yourself as a trainer. You don't have to challenge your notions of yourself as a trainer who can train a sit stay. Wanting something is safe. It's safe. It's comfortable. But you don't have to do anything challenging. On the other hand, when you commit to something, that means that you've decided that you're going to do whatever it takes to make it happen. If you commit to a better sit stay, that means you're going to do whatever it takes to make it happen, even if it's uncomfortable for you, even if it's annoying for you, even if it's restrictive for you. So for example, if you've decided that you're going to take action on a sit stay, and part of that is that you're never going to run your dog if your dog breaks a sit stay, then that's going to be uncomfortable and it might be annoying and it might be restrictive and it might be costly, because if you enter a show and you take your dog to the start line and your dog breaks the start line, you've committed to not continuing with the run or doing a fix and go for the run. You're just not going to continue with that run in a way that's going to yield to a clean run or a qualifying run because you've committed to better sit stays. So you've committed and you're going to stick with it if it's uncomfortable or annoying or restrictive, or the results aren't as fast as you want them to be. It could take months to get a better start line. It might not happen in a day. It might not happen in a weekend. And you're going to take action. You're going to take massive action, and some of that massive action might be you're going to change your thoughts. You're going to be the kind of person who is committed to never running if your dog breaks a sit stay, and you're going to keep chipping away at it, and you're going to keep at it, and you're going to keep at it, and you're keep at it, going to keep at it. And part of that commitment also means that if you've got a plan and you're taking action and it doesn't work, you're not going to give in to those inner voices that say, you're just a failure. You're terrible. You can't train a sit stay. You might as well just give up and let your dog run amok off the start line. You're not going to give in to that because you're committed. You're going to manage your thoughts and manage your feelings about those thoughts And you're going to think about how you can pivot and try something else, another strategy for your start lines or going to more classes or fun matches or whatever. So you're just going to keep doing that and doing that and doing that. You're going to commit. You're going to stick to your plan. You're going to be prepared to pivot your plan if you need to, but you're going to continue to stay committed instead of just saying that you want it. You're not just wanting it. You're committed. And that's kind of an important point as well, that idea of pivoting, because I think there's a lot of us in dog sports and dog training that think that once we pick a strategy, like for sit stays or the weave pulls, that's a pretty good one. Like, oh, I've always used the 2x2 method. I've always used it and I always will. We tend to have loyalty to a strategy. So we pick a strategy or an action plan and then we stick with that strategy forever. We think we're going to stick with that strategy forever. And we're just never going to change. If I've always done the 2x2s, I'm never going to change. I've always trained my running contacts this way. I'm never going to change. And there's some pride involved in it. So for example, I've had a lot of students come to me over the years. They set out to train a running contact with the goal of having great fast contacts with their dogs. And they're having trouble training the running contact. And my recommendation to them is that, okay, look, your goal really was that you wanted solid contacts that were competitive and fast. Why don't you pivot and teach a 2-on-2-off? Oh no, I couldn't. I've already spent a year teaching a running contact. And my response is always, well, the amount of time that you've previously invested in a strategy shouldn't have any bearing on whether or not you should stick with that strategy. So if your goal really was to have competitive fast contacts and your current strategy isn't working, then let's pivot. Let's change. You don't have to stick with a certain strategy forever. There should be no ego and no pride when it comes to pivoting. So you should absolutely be thinking to challenge that particular belief if that's one that you have, because strategies stop working. Sometimes they need changing or amending. Maybe you've got a different dog this time around than you had last time. So your sit stay plan doesn't work for this dog because it's different than the last dog or different than the last 10 dogs. Courses change. So your handling needs to change. Your training needs to change. The types of behaviors that you train need to change. Your physical abilities change. So you can't get too wedded to the idea of this is how I've always done it. This is how I'm always going to do it, because things change and we're going to have to change with those things. So if a strategy stops working, if you've committed to a plan, whether it's, I'm going to train sit stays, or I'm going to improve my fitness so that I can get around a course better. If a strategy stops working, then you have to resist the temptation to give in to that little voice that says, well, that strategy's not, didn't work, you moron. Of course it didn't work. You're a complete failure. I knew it all along. If the strategy stops working, you have to resist the temptation to give in to that little voice in your head and pivot, find a new strategy or tweak your current strategy, and you have to keep at it. Keep at it. Now, this whole podcast series is about mindset and growth mindset and challenge and the mental game. So how does all this tie into that? How does commitment tie into that? You have to keep in mind that commitment compared to wanting, remember, wanting just feels good. You don't have to take action. If you want something, you can want it. Then it just, you know, just feels good, like eating candy. If you commit, you're committing to a process. And when you commit to a process, whether it's fitness or training or coming up with a new way to train something or training a new dog or maybe venturing into a new venue. Maybe you only ever did AKC. Now you're going to do UKI. You're committing to a process, and that commitment to that process may involve some discomfort. You may have to adapt and adjust, and you really have to keep in mind the idea of having a challenge mindset, and that failure is not a judgment as on your abilities as a person. It's just feedback for you to tweak and continue that cycle. And another thing to keep in mind, when you commit to a process, whether you commit or not, actually, you have to keep in mind the idea of internal integrity. So if you just want something and you're not prepared to commit to it, to having it, that's totally fine. But if you do commit to it, you need to really commit. And don't just pretend to commit. If you want something and you're not ready or you can't commit because of life circumstances or whatever, that's totally fine. But don't pretend that you're committed. Because if you commit to something, to a process, and then you fail at that process when you're not, when you weren't quite ready to commit and you didn't have things in place to help yourself commit, you're going to start a cycle where you're kind of half-assing the training or half-assing the fitness or half-assing your nutrition or whatever. And you're setting yourself up for failure. And when you do that, you're kind of cheating on yourself, and you're cheating on your dog, and you're eroding your relationship with yourself and with your dog because you're not, you're making promises constantly and you're not delivering on them. So you're not being honest with yourself. You're not behaving with integrity, internal integrity with yourself. So for example, let's say that you have decided on a plan for training the weaves, the weave poles. You picked a plan and the plan is spelled out in a lot of detail. Maybe you made the plan yourself, or maybe you're following a plan that a well-known dog agility trainer has already spelled out for you. You say you're committed out loud and internally, and you even get your calendar out and you plan to train 5 days a week, short sessions, multiple times a day. You've got all of that covered. But then you only end up training 1 day a week, and you come up with all sorts of reasons and excuses about why you can't clear time out of your schedule to actually train those weave poles. And then the weave pole training doesn't go well and your dog is missing entries or skipping poles or popping out early. So the next thing that happens to most of us, we tend to respond in a few pretty predictable ways. We either engage in a lot of negative self-talk, where we tell ourselves we're terrible, that we're a failure. Of course it didn't work. You've never been able to train weaves before. Why would you be able to train them now? Or we play the victim and we say, well, this plan is just terrible. This plan didn't work for my dog. And a lot of the times we never really followed the plan. Remember, we only trained 1 day a week when we said we were going to train 5 days a week. So we play the victim and blame the plan when the plan, we never really even followed it. Or we justify things like, well, I just didn't have the time. Life got in the way. And all of these thoughts that we have erode our relationship with ourselves. They erode that internal integrity you've got with yourself and also with your dog, because you made a promise, you made a plan, you committed, and then you didn't follow through. And so you know that you didn't follow through on your promises to yourself. So you have to review, go back and review that thought model that I talked about at the very beginning of this podcast and the last one, where I talked about how you've got this objective circumstance, weave poles, and then what follows after that are thoughts and then feelings and then actions and then results. So you have to get your thoughts and feelings straight before you settle on a plan or a strategy. And you've got to work through that thought model backwards. So for example, with the weave poles, what's the result that you want? You want a solid weave pole performance where your dog can find that entry on his own and stay in those poles no matter what you're doing, even if you fall on your face on the course. And then move backwards through that thought model. So if I want really super solid weave poles, what actions do I need to take and not take to make sure that my dog has really solid weave poles? Or the sit stay. If the result I want is a solid sit stay, what actions do I need to take and not take to be able to have that solid sit stay? Maybe I'm going to take the actions of not entering trials that I really want to enter. I'm not going to run my dog if the stay gets broken. I'm going to do fix and go or leave the course. I'm going to find some new trainers that can help me with my sit stay issues and help me be a better sit stay trainer. And then I need to work backwards from that and think about how do I need to feel about the actions I have to take to get the result that I want, whether it's the sit stay or the weave poles. And quite often, for me at least, the feeling that I need to have on board is motivated. And then I'm going to work backwards from that. What do I need to think to feel motivated? So what do I need to think to feel motivated so that I take actions and get the result that I want? So in the example of the sit stay that I've been using, maybe I want to have a solid sit stay so that I can lead out on a course, so that I can feel more control in the beginning of a run, so that I can use the other skills that I know I've trained my dog to do, so that I can qualify more often and have those clean runs, so that I can advance through the levels and maybe get a championship title. So those are the things that I need to think. Those are the things that I'm going to think about that will help me feel motivated so that I take actions to get the results that I want. And at the bottom of it, the circumstance, the objective circumstance can just be sit, stay, or weave pulse that just generates all that other stuff, the thoughts, the feelings, the actions, and the results. So working backwards through that can help you clarify how you need to feel about the thoughts you're having about something. You know, what thoughts do you want to have so that you generate the feelings you need to feel so that you can take that action that you need to take and get the results that you want to have. And it's really important that your motivation, if that's the feeling that you have, that it should be, your reasons should be internal. Because honestly, you don't need to have a better sit stay because you are concerned about people judging you. Oh, I need to have a better sit stay because everybody thinks I'm a loser because I don't have a good sit stay. Honestly, you can't control what other people think about you. And most people, most of us, including all of us in that, are so self-involved that we're not even aware whether or not someone else has a good sit stay or not. We're pretty wrapped up in our own problems. A lot of people won't even notice when your sit stay or your weave pulls get better. So if nobody cares but you and nobody notices but you, your reasons for taking action and changing how you feel and think about something really need to be internal. They can't be external. Now, I also want to point out that when I'm going through this process, I've talked about this before, I choose motivation for the feeling that I want to have and not confidence. I don't think that it's helpful to say I want to feel confident, because feeling confident is really not something that needs to be part of this equation. You don't have to be confident that you're going to achieve a goal before you start working on it. And in fact, why would you feel confident that you're going to achieve a goal if you've not yet achieved the goal? There are a lot of times when I don't feel confident about something that I'm attempting. I don't feel confident that I'm going to be able to run a course clean. I don't feel confident that I'm going to be able to make it to a blind cross. You just don't need to feel confident. Confidence typically comes after you've achieved something. So if you've never successfully trained a sit stay, or you've never successfully trained a running contact, or you've never successfully run a course clean, why would you engage in telling yourself, I'm going to change my feeling so I feel confident? That's going to be a really tough one to believe in for yourself. Courage is required before achieving a goal, but confidence is not, you're not going to, don't bank on feeling confident until after you've achieved something. Courage is required before you've achieved something. Courage is required to commit to working on a goal or taking action toward a goal. Courage is uncomfortable. And courage is where that challenge mindset comes in. Confidence is comfortable. You've already achieved something and you may not even care to ever achieve it again. But if you want to continue moving forward with your skills and your abilities, it's courage that you need, not confidence. Courage is what you need to maintain a challenge mindset where failure is just feedback and not a judgment on your self-worth. And your brain is going to want to make excuses and justifications to protect your ego because courage really is uncomfortable. You're going to need courage to make and keep commitments towards your training goals and your fitness goals and your nutrition goals. And you're going to need courage to continue taking action towards your stated goals. But you don't need confidence. Confidence feels good, but typically confidence can actually lead to lack of action. Confidence will help you rest on your current abilities. I can't stress it enough. You don't need confidence to take action and you don't even need confidence to do well. You can step to the line and have no confidence at all that something is going to happen, but you do need courage. So that's a biggie. And hopefully you've made it this far into this podcast to hear that again and repeat it to yourself again. Confidence is not required to take action, repeated action, toward the goals you've committed to. Courage is required. Confidence comes after you've achieved something, but then you need to have courage to try it again and see if you can achieve it again. So courage is way more important than confidence. So I want to go through the thought model with a result that I want personally. So right now, a result that I want is that I want to lose 10 pounds, have 10 pounds to go to reach my weight goals, and I want to improve my fitness. So that's the result. Working backwards from that, what action do I need to take? The actions that I need to take are sticking to a nutrition and diet plan, even when it's uncomfortable, and also sticking to a workout plan, even when it's cold and the weather sucks and I can barely walk because I'm sore from yesterday's workout. My actions are sometimes going to be restrictive, uncomfortable. I'm going to get sore. It's not going to make me feel happy all the time, but I'm going to work backwards from that and figure out how do I need to feel in order to take action on those things that I know are not always going to be pleasant and comfortable. So I'm back to motivation. I need to feel motivated. I don't need to feel confident. I just need to feel motivated. I don't know that I can achieve these goals, but I need to feel motivated and courageous that I can work towards them. And that's going to help me take action on my plan of getting fitter and lightening the load a little bit. So working backwards from the feelings, what do I need to think in order to feel motivated so that this isn't all just positive thinking, woo-woo, wanting? How do I stay committed? So the thought that I keep in mind that motivates me to continue taking action to get the results that I want, the thought is that I want to take care of my body so that I can be healthy and fit and so that my joints last longer, so that I can be quick on my feet, so that I can communicate clearly to my dogs. I'm getting tongue-tied here. So that I can communicate clearly to my dogs on the course, so that we can maximize our chances of being a good team. So there's no outcome in there in terms of ribbons or winning or placement. It's just, I want to take care of my body so that I can be the best handler I can be for as long as I can. And so that I, you know, don't blow out a knee or anything like that. That's going to keep me motivated when it's cold and wet and dark. And really, I just want to eat cookies. That's going to keep me motivated. And then at the very top or bottom, depending on how you look at it, the circumstance, the objective thing that just is it, my fitness, my body. So working through it from top to bottom, circumstance is my fitness, my body. The thought is I need to take care of my body so that I can be healthy, fit, and fast, so that I can communicate clearly to my dogs on course, so that we can be the best team possible. And those thoughts are going to keep me motivated so that I can take actions, even when they're not comfortable actions or pleasant or fun, because the result of losing 10 pounds and getting to that goal weight and improving my fitness, those things are going to help keep me, looping back to the thought, the best handler that I can be. Now, I'm going to have to work at repeating the thought that I want to take care of my body and be healthy, fit, and fast. And I'm going to have to evaluate repeatedly if it really does evoke motivation. Because if it doesn't, I'm going to need to tweak those thoughts. Because if they don't evoke the thoughts, or if they don't evoke the feelings that I need to keep me going, it's just positive thinking pie in the sky. I need to be prepared for my brain to want to go back to sitting around, eating cookies, surfing Facebook or the internet when I should be out doing a workout that I know is going to be uncomfortable. I know it's going to make it hard to walk the next day. So I need to evaluate those thoughts and make sure they really get me motivated to get out there and take those actions and do those things. My brain's going to tell me I'm going to fail, so why bother trying? So I need to hedge my bets with this. It's going to remind me how much it sucks to be sore from a workout. So I have to keep watching my thoughts and my feelings and evaluate where those inner judgments are coming from. And I'm going to be constantly wanting to slip back into those old thought habits until I've made the new thoughts a habit. And it's kind of like right now, it's January 2023, and I'm writing some checks to pay for show entries and stuff. And I still write 2022 for the date because my brain just hasn't adjusted to the fact that it's a new year quite yet. Now, in this case, am I telling myself I'm a failure? Oh my God, Daisy, you're such an idiot. You're such a failure. Can't you remember that it's 2023? Why are you writing 2022? Of course not, because it's pretty inconsequential. And a couple weeks from now, I'm going to be writing 2023 like I've been doing it for years and years. And I'm going to do that for the rest of 2023. And then in January 2024, I'm going to go through the same process over and over again. But that's how it works for any time that you're going to tweak that thought model because you want to take different actions and get different results. So that's it for episode 2. There was a lot of information thrown at you guys. about the thought model. And then also, I really want you guys to think about confidence versus courage and whether you really need to be confident or do you really just maybe need to be more courageous. So that's it for episode two. I hope you'll join me for the next episode, episode three. Let me know your thoughts on this podcast and leave a comment, and I'll see you guys online. Thanks for joining me on the Agility Challenge podcast with Daisy Peel. If you'd like to take your agility training, handling, and mental game to the next level, check out that ebook that I mentioned at the top of the episode. You can get it for free at podcast.theagilitychallenge.com. It's not for sale anywhere, and it's only available to subscribers of my email list. Getting on board with the right mindset when it comes to your dog agility handling and training challenges is a game changer, so make sure you check it out.